Hello, and welcome to Creative Playdate, the show for people pursuing creative careers while also raising children. I'm your host, Michelle Condridge. I'm very happy to announce that Creative Playdate is now going to be syndicated on Illustration Age. On today's episode, I have a really fun conversation with illustrator and surface pattern designer Allison Cole about her experience in the surface pattern design world, as well as what it's like to deal with unexpected health problems during pregnancy. So let's jump in. I'm here today with illustrator and surface designer Allison Cole. Allison has worked for a variety of clients, has her own stationery line, and has presented at conferences and workshops on a number of topics, including a surface design workshop at Icon 8. Welcome to the show, Allison.
Thanks so much for having me.
I was in Frog and Toad the other day, which is a Providence local gift shop, and I saw some of your designs. How long have they been carrying your products?
A couple of years now. I launched my stationery line in 2014, and they were they're always super awesome. They were early supporters of the products, so I'm always thankful for them.
Yeah, this town is really seems really great for that. Do you sell anything anywhere else here in town?
The RISD Museum store.
Oh, nice.
Carries it. And usually I have a rep that sells my stationery line, and they try to be very conscious of like competition. And because Providence is a very small town, it's very, there's like rules with where you can sell your stuff. So I let her handle that.
Yeah. Is it like so that you don't sort of poach your own work?
Exactly.
Interesting. Yeah. How has it been transitioning from being a RISD student in Providence to working here as an illustrator?
It's been great. I love Providence so much. I know like a lot of my friends, you know, that live here, a lot of people have gone, you know, in and out or come back, but I just love it here. It's so affordable, and easy to live here, and just, you know, the ocean's nearby. It's pretty supportive of a creative community. And, you know, RISD is always great that it's there as like a home base. So for me, it was like, I came here in 99 to start my freshman year of RISD, and I always feel like I just never went back. I never went home, really. I had an apartment and stayed summers. And then for me, it was just natural to keep staying, keep living here.
Are you still teaching at the New Hampshire Institute of Art?
Not anymore. I taught there for a few years, and the commute, along with like a number of other factors, it just got to be too crazy. So I stepped down from my position there, and I've been teaching adjunct at RISD the last few years.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know if they did, if they'd had any adjunct instructors there.
Oh yeah, RISD's got a lot.
So can you tell me a little bit about your background and the trajectory of your career?
Sure. So I kind of started, I can start way back when I was in school. While I was a student at RISD, I was super involved in independent comics, and I loved creating comics. I was a printmaking major. I was not an illustration major, but I took all my electives in illustration, and so I kind of got like this nice balance. The printmaking department was super supportive of whatever I wanted to do. It was really like a self-directed curriculum in terms of like the subject matter of your work and what you were pursuing. So I really liked that, and I focused on comics and would screen print these little like intricate crazy books. Like I did a book that was like, I don't even remember how many, 15 colors. It took me forever, and I would sell them for like $5 each, you know, like just craziness. But so I kind of got a lot of support while I was in school for comics, and I made a website and I started getting, you know, more outside of Providence sales. I would do SPX, the small press expo in Maryland. I started doing other kind of trade shows like that, and I was invited to be in anthologies and fun things like that. And my second half of senior year, I wrote, or my whole senior year project was a comic book called Never Ending Summer. And it was all about it was autobiographical, and it was all about my previous summer in between my junior and senior years of school, and ended up being this epic, like, you know, 90-100 page graphic novel. And I sent it out to some publishers to see if they were interested, and Alternative Comics, which at the time was based out of Florida, was interested, and they let me know they were interested in publishing it. So that was kind of my entryway, I guess, into the real world, from school to kind of being an illustrator. And that was published in 2004. So the year after I graduated, I kind of worked on finishing up the book, and I worked all kinds of crappy jobs, like bartender, and, you know, I did waitressing, and it was painful and horrible. And then I would come home at night and finish up my comic and kind of perfect it. I ended up at one point redrawing the whole first half, you know, just all kinds of insane, neurotic things. And that kind of lit the fire under me to continue to pursue illustration as a field of work. And as I was doing that, I kind of shifted gears with my style, and my comic book style is very, like, naive, and it's, you know, not realistic at all, you know, very heavily stylized. And I decided that that was a style for me. And because the comics were autobiographical, I wanted to keep that personal and something that I would continue to do for fun and for myself and for commercial work that I was creating for other people. I kind of decided to draw a hard line with that kind of early on, that I wouldn't do my illustration style for commercial work. I did have one project where I did that, and it was like, oh, it didn't feel right. Those worlds should not meet, kind of a thing. So I started actively, like, trying to develop a new illustration style, and and that was kind of those tough early years of figuring all that out. I can't remember what year exactly, I think it was 2008 or 2009, I started thinking about getting a rep and getting representation for my work, to help take it to the next level and push myself further and reach new clients. And I ended up signing with an agent that I stayed with for a number of years. It was super helpful. I recently left her. I've been self-represented now for about 2, almost 3 years. And it's been really great. So that's kind of my, like, long, long, quick overview.
How long have you been into pattern design, and how do you promote that sort of work?
I've been doing the surface stuff for a long, long time now. I kind of actually started doing it back in my comic book days. I would always do end paper patterns for my comics, and it was always something I was interested in and wanted to pursue and get better at. And I just kind of struggled through. Now there's so many resources out there, which is wonderful. There's online classes and webinars and all kinds of things that kind of teach you pattern making and how to create a effective, sellable surface design. But back then I kind of, like, just had to stab away in the dark at figuring it out. And I made a lot of patterns that were not sellable at all. Like, so many, like, sad crying clouds, and I was like, somebody would want this for their baby, right? And like, no. No, they don't. Well, I do, you know, personally. That's, I guess, where my card line kind of came into being for all my, like, slightly weirder stuff. But for the surface design world, it is super commercial and very trend-based. It's a little bit harder to be a weirdo in that industry. Like, yeah. Sometimes they're looking for strange things, but for every, like, weird, wacky pattern I create, I'm probably creating, you know, 10 totally normal ones, like floral and, you know, elephants. And then I'll have my one weird one. And then, you know, a lot of times, like more and more now, people are liking the weird stuff. So I think it's a good thing. But
so have you found a market for the weirder things?
I think so. And I think the market is changing as well. And it definitely, when I first started in it, was so, neutral babies are elephants. And if you want to create a girl pattern, it is this way. And a boy pattern is this way. And it was very, like, lines were very heavily drawn. And now it's more, it's a lot more free. And the industry seems to be having a lot more fun with pattern and surface. I mostly do pattern and surface design for the children's market. So that's also, you know, very different from someone that's doing surface design for, like, you know, I don't know. I don't even know the other
markets.
Like, yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah, our home decor, things like that. So I get to have more, I guess, like, create more whimsical designs and things like that because it makes sense for that market. Which was also something that was kind of funny. It was like, it took me a long time to be okay with that I created work that was like I just created work. I tell this to students a lot. You just kind of have to create your work and the market will find you. You don't really have to like pick a market. Like they will come to you and say like, yes, you know, this is, we want to hire you to draw this. 'Cause for me, I never saw myself or thought of myself as an illustrator that would do work for children. And it just started happening and I was like, wait, what's happening? And then I was okay with it, you know, after some time. But yeah, it's just funny. It's like they pick you.
Yeah. How do you deal with trends in that market? Do you just sort of do your work and let it develop on its own and see what sells? Or are you looking at trends to see where you want to push the work?
That's a really great question. I think early on in my career, I was definitely looking at trend more to help establish myself. So I think for like somebody that's first starting out in surface design, I think it's a really good idea to be aware of trend and like take it in and absorb it and do it in a responsible way. So like, you know, go to stores, don't just stay on the internet, you know, like get out there in the world and like immerse yourself in the market that you want to kind of, or think you want to pursue or, and then like forget about it and then create your work so that you're not too heavily influenced by that, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, don't like have your computer up and like you're drawing and looking at the screen at the same time. I think you can kind of absorb it and then filter it through your own way. And then that way you can still stay unique and original, but that you're not creating something that the industry will consider like, you know, not sellable or, you know, an area that they've done. Maybe it's like considered so last year, you know, or something. It's really hard to predict though. The trend stuff is a little frustrating. I feel like there are certain trends you can always bank on or like certain motifs you can always bank on being sellable. And that's also a good kind of way to start your focus. Like florals, everybody is always, if you do a trade show or anything, they're like, oh, send me your florals or.
Oh, that's interesting. Like a sort of a base standard totally. Or something.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like a huge one. And like, if you're interested in, you know, the baby market, then always creating those like gender neutral, or like baby patterns, you know, anything with like characters, animals, it's kind of like an easy one. You know, they're always looking for elephants, monkeys, owls, you know, they're just like, they'll just, you know, sit down with you and be like, show me your blah, you know, and like you woodland, you know, and then you pull up your archive of, oh, here's all the woodland.
Yeah.
And then, they can look through it.
Would you say that your process is as playful as your illustration looks?
Sometimes it's like this really torturous process, but usually I try to have a lot of fun, especially with the surface work, because a lot of it is self-generated. And that's, I think, another cool thing about that industry a lot of people don't know about, because I love my commission projects. That's kind of like my favorite thing to do, is to collaborate with other people and other art directors. But when you're creating your surface pattern work, it's all, you're generating it for yourself. You build your archive, and then, you know, people come to you saying, can we license this existing piece or change this existing piece or create something new based on that? So I try to have as much fun with that as possible, because it is self-generated and there is no client and while you're doing it. So usually it all starts in my sketchbook, and I'll go to like antique stores or like get out in the world, look at nature, you know, just like kind of get out there and do stuff and draw and doodle from there. And then just kind of create drawings either on Bristol board or on my iPad, and then take those kind of doodles and drawings and build them into repeat patterns.
So this is a good segue into the parenting part of it, I guess. But it sounds like you are able to do a lot of experimentation generally with your work. And a lot of people have trouble doing that without having children. do you have any advice on how to cultivate that when you have a child that's limiting time and space?
Oh, that's another great question. Yeah, it's so hard. It's so hard. I don't think the first year, so my son is 2 years old, and his whole first year of life, he's still a very difficult kid. He's not an easy kid. He was a super colicky baby. He was very like high maintenance, like didn't want to leave my side ever. So we had a really hard time that first year, just like finding a way to like live and work and function in this new scenario. And it took a lot of time to be able to figure the rhythm out. But now my answer is just daycare.
So he is in daycare now.
He's in daycare, yeah. And he loves it. He's like super happy there. So it works for us. We had babysitters in our house for a little while, and we tried that out to just see if, you know, that would, because it was so hard for him to like separate from me or from my husband. That was not great. I work out of the house. So I have a whole studio set up in, the basement of our house, and, I can hear everything that's going on upstairs. So like if he was crying or freaking out, I was super tense, you know, it was like really hard to focus and get work done. So sending him to daycare was a great, and he just loves it. He's around other kids. He's having fun. Like I drop him off, he doesn't even like say goodbye to me. See you later, mom.
Yeah, that's, we did, we had babysitters for a while, and our daughter was always very shy. And even from 3 months old, she wouldn't let anybody else hold her, even like her grandparents. So, which was kind of a nightmare. She's better now. You know, she's 2.5, and that's better now, but yeah, the babysitters at home, it's too close still.
Yeah,
you need that separation. Yeah,
definitely.
So you're not living, I saw the photos of the loft that you had on Design Sponge. So you're not living there anymore?
Yeah, not anymore. That was actually a crazy situation, but we we lived there, and there was a fire, like a crazy huge fire in that building. Luckily, our loft was not affected, but we moved out of there like shortly after, because it was pretty crazy. We had like some smoke and water damage, and that was it. So thank goodness. But after that, we were like, yeah, let's live in a house.
Yeah,
let's buy a house.
Oh, and what does your husband do?
He's a musician and a college professor.
Okay, what does he teach? What does he
He
teach?
teaches writing. He's a poet as well. He was just the recipient of the Rhode Island State Council for the Arts Poetry Fellowship for this past year.
Oh,
So,
that's great.
yeah.
Knowing that your situation is very similar to my situation, I'm very interested in how the two of you handled that transition into parenthood while you're both essentially working from home.
Yeah, it was tough. It was definitely tough. It was a lot of us. Like, we put up a whiteboard on our refrigerator, and it was like a little calendar. And we had at first, I started off being really crazy about it, and I would have like red pen would be Eric, and red and the blue pen would be me, and like we would trade off time. So like Eric would get this block of time, I would get the next block of time, and we would trade off like taking care of our son so that we had time to work. And it was really, really hard. And then, with the babysitters and daycare, things got so much easier. Like, just I don't even know why we didn't have a plan in place first. Like,
That
the
was going to be
whole
my
9 months.
next question.
Yeah, like it's like you've got 9 months, this thing is coming, but I don't know what we thought it was going to be, or like that we thought it was going to be this super easy, magical thing. Like, I had a little pack and play set up in my office area, my studio, and I thought, oh, you can just nap in there and I can work and it's so easy. I think, like, for people who have children that nap, maybe it's easier. I don't know. My
Right.
son just like did not nap. He would only nap sleeping on me. Like,
Oh.
it was just like a whole. Just any like sort of, I had no plan, but like my tiny like fantasy of a plan was so wrong. So we had to do a lot of like sitting down and looking at everything and being like, okay, how can we make this work so we're not like losing our minds and wanting to kill each other. And it's hard to 'cause like, even though creating, doing, being an illustrator is my job, it's also like my release and my outlet and how I don't know, exist in the world. And how, if I don't draw, I don't feel good. It's like kind of a such an important thing. And for Eric, it's same, very similar for him with he's also a musician, so with writing and creating music, it's so important to him and his life. It was just kind of like we were unbalanced people, until we found that balance. So, I think, yeah, I'm so glad we have more help now. But that first year, I don't think we could have done it differently. Like, we just had to get through that year. And they get older. Like, that's what everyone would tell us. Like, they grow up, they get older, it gets less hard, like things get easier. And like at the time you don't believe it, but then when it starts to get easier, you're like, oh, this is what they were talking about.
Something that we struggled with, especially before we had full-time daycare, was feeling like we were both stay-at-home parents at the same time, even though neither of us ever wanted that out of our life. Even though we were both home all day, but we both felt like stay-at-home parents. Is that a feeling? Did you ever have that feeling or?
Oh yeah. It was just like, who's working? How are we going to pay the bills? Like, we're both like immersed in this like crazy child. And yeah, definitely can relate to that feeling
I
for
think
sure.
that's I think it definitely is something that is unique to people who are working from home or pursuing some sort of creative career where the boundaries are much less defined. And then there's the financial piece of it that especially if both of you are in a similar position as we are, there's a lot of financial pressure if you're talking about starting daycare or babysitters or
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's such a juggle, like the flexibility and the freedom of being freelance or like self-employed or having the flexible schedule is so great, but then it's also such a burden sometimes. Like I thought that so many times, like, oh, if I had a full-time job, it would be a no-brainer. Like you just, this is what you do, like to keep your job, you know? And when I started kind of thinking about it more that way, the guilt went away a little bit about like the babysitters and the, you know, like all the things that we had tried that didn't quite work. It kind of got, you know, a lot easier to be like, yes, this is what you do.
Right. Were you concerned that becoming a mother would put a damper on your career at all?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I definitely worried about that a lot. I don't even think I told people when I was pregnant. I kept it a secret for like as long as possible until the point of it being ridiculous. And then I was like, okay, it's going to be okay. Like, it happens.
Yeah. Were you teaching at the time?
I was.
Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, it was really hard. Oh my God, it was so hard to teach and be massively pregnant. My poor students, like they would like, if anyone called out sick or anything, or like, you know, said they couldn't make it to class because they're sick, I would just look at them the next day and be like, I was here. Yeah. Look at me. I was here.
Yeah.
Guilt them into it.
So when did you stop teaching in relation to having your son?
I stopped when he was, time is so weird now. Mm-hmm. I taught the whole first half. So I think I stopped teaching in New Hampshire when he was, I want to say, 8 or 9 months. So it was a good chunk of time of like the sleep deprived time.
And you were commuting up there for,
yeah,
for that? Wow. How far is that?
It's far. It was like an hour and 40 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, each way. I listened to a lot of podcasts.
Yeah. I thought like, oh, she's probably just teaching online. Commuting to New Hampshire.
Yeah, it was a little crazy. And I think a big part of me, I had some other health problems that also impacted my ability to continue teaching. That's been like an ongoing struggle with like balancing my schedule as well. It's something I haven't really talked about publicly, but it's not that big of a deal, or I guess it is. But while I was pregnant, I found out that I have a heart condition, and it was something I've had since I was 12. It's not like a heart condition in the sense that it's like irreversible, but it's called supraventricular tachycardia. I'm probably not pronouncing it right, but it's called SVT for short. And it's interesting. I think about this. I think about this all the time, just in relation to being a woman. I had had symptoms of this since I was a teenager, and no one ever took me seriously. And I was always told it was panic attacks and that I was having a panic attack, and it was anxiety and I must have anxiety. And so I listened to people because doctors and nurses were telling me this. And I would always tell them that my grandmother had SVT and that these were symptoms of it. So I was aware that this was a symptom of it, and I was still brushed off. So it wasn't until I was a pregnant woman going to a hospital, Women and Infants Hospital in Providence, who caters to women, that they looked at me and they were like, oh my God, like this is really serious. You need to be on like medication. And like, it was just like, it was a horrible thing to go through while being pregnant, but also like such a relief to finally know I wasn't crazy. And when I started seeing my electrophysiologist, because it's basically a thing, it has to do with the electrical nodes in your heart, and I have extra electrical nodes, so that makes my heart beat super fast at random intervals, which is horrible and not super fun, and my blood pressure goes through the roof, and I have to get a hospital I have to go to the ER every time it happens, and get another medication that they do through an IV that stops your heart and restarts it. Like, it's insane to like make the rhythm stop. So I'm actually getting a surgery that's going to correct it permanently in a few months. So I'm super looking forward to that.
Yes. Good luck with that.
Thank you. So that was just like a crazy, crazy thing that I've been ongoing dealing with. So the commute up to New Hampshire coincided with this, you know, health problem that I dealt with through pregnancy. And then after pregnancy, they had to change the medication a lot on me to find the right dosage and the right medication. And it was making me super tired, and I was unable to drive for a little while. So that was why I pretty much was like, well, that answers that for me. But I was super concerned at the time that people would blame it on being a mother. You know, not that there's anything wrong with that. Like, people all the time, you know, decide to stop working or leave their jobs or, you know, change their lives when they have children. But I was super almost like frustrated that I was like, I don't want this to be perceived this way. And that led me to a lot of thinking, like, why was I so worried about that? You know, it's an ongoing thing that I think a lot of women deal with that have children.
Yeah. I think I can't speak for women who are stay-at-home mothers or in other types of careers, but I feel like being perceived as a mother first is something that I've never wanted.
Yeah.
And I think, especially in this career, I don't want that to be the first thing that people think of. Of course, now I'm doing a podcast about parenting. But hopefully this will help with that sort of, you know, like, there are a lot more of us than are maybe that visible, I guess.
Yeah. And I think it's awesome that you're doing this podcast, because I think there's so many. Yeah, it's like, it's weird that you would have to hide being a pregnant woman or a woman in general, or like the perceptions that people, I mean, like, and it exists on both sides of, you know, women are guilty of it as well. Like, I've had art directors, you know, email me being like, oh, I didn't know if you were still working, you know, like random things like that. Like, why wouldn't I be? Like, should I not post pictures of my son on the internet if, like, you're going to think I don't work or something? I don't know. It was just like really, you know, there's definitely a lot of that out there, and it's really frustrating.
Yeah.
It's really, really frustrating.
You know, I just had the thought, I wonder if it happens more when our children are younger, because they take up so much more of our time. You know, like if it's a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old, it's like they're in school all day and then they've got their friends and then they're not so.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, of course, they're still as much a part of your life, but I wonder if people perceive your time commitment as being different. I don't know. I'm just.
Yeah.
Speculating.
Definitely. It definitely could be true.
Do you find that being a mother has taken up more space in your mind than you like it to, if that makes sense?
Oh yeah, it takes up a lot of headspace. I think this was kind of interesting. I don't know if this happened to you at all, but when pre-baby, when I, you know, used to sit down here and create work, I would like listen to music the whole time and it would be super fun. I'd get lost in my thoughts, whatever. And now I can't do that. I have to listen to like a TV show or a podcast. I have to listen to like conversation so I can drown out my own thoughts.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So that I can just like focus and get the work done and still feel like, you know, I guess like good and having fun, like just so it doesn't like overwhelm. I'm sure it'll change at some point, but yeah, that helped me for sure.
How has having your son changed your work or your process?
It definitely has a little bit. I used to work, this is like a really specific thing, but I used to work on bristleboard. So I would do, and I still do for a lot of projects, but if I have a project where I have more of like a time crunch or especially like that year, his first year of life, like I did a ton of work on my iPad. I bought an iPad Pro and I just use that to do my sketching. instead of working on Bristol and having to scan and clean it up, it just kind of cut like a whole step out of my process. Mm-hmm. And it's still, I try to keep it as similar as possible to my like hand-drawn working methods, but I do prefer like the feeling of the hand-drawn method, so I do that when I can. But the iPad just was like, you know, you can just cut out all those little steps, and it was much faster. And I could like work on my iPad at night when he was like, you know, in my bed and he was sleeping on me and all the lights are off. I could still draw. So it helped a lot.
Yeah, I think that's something that I'm going to find out, is that a lot of people that's about the time they made the switch to sketching digitally. Because I do the same thing. I have a Surface Pro, and it's especially for client work. It's like I don't have to have a bunch of scratch paper around. I don't have to scan and clean up pencil drawings. And yeah,
exactly. Yeah, you have so that whole chunk of time that you're like, because yeah, when you're a parent, you're counting like minutes. Yeah, or you're just like, all right.
And sometimes the scanner is loud, even if they're sleeping. Have you pursued any fields or projects that you wouldn't have before you had a baby?
I don't think so. I think for me, it's been because I've done so much children's work for so long. It's actually kind of funny. I've had like, we decorated his whole nursery with like product samples that I've had. Like, so it was kind of funny. Like in my attic, I've been like hoarding, you know, I felt like I was like a weird baby hoarder of things or something. Like I had just had like whole like nursery bedding collections and pillows and like wall art and everything, like decals. I was like, it's all here. Like I don't have to do anything. So I feel like in a lot of ways, you know, I think I understand the market a little bit better for a lot of that stuff. And so I think it's helped things, but it hasn't necessarily changed too much for me, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As hard as freelance creative careers are, what kind of value do you think is there for your son as he grows up watching you pursue this kind of career long term, especially if your husband is also pursuing creative career?
Oh yeah, we hope he will. We always joke that he's probably going to be like a mathematician or like a scientist or something.
Yes, we're always like, voting for scientists.
Like I know my husband is like, do not become a musician. You cannot become. But we just joke about that stuff. But, you know, I hope he can, you know, see our work ethic and how hard we work, but that it's like a totally achievable career. And I think that's really exciting to like dispel the myth of, you know, starving artist or anything like that. Like that we can be like, hey, you know, and that we're fully, I know it's really important to both of us that we are showing him that we are happy in what we do and that we really love what we do. Because I think that's something that just makes it that much more worth it or exciting if he can be excited about it too. Mm-hmm. And he already hangs out with me down here. I have a freelance employee that helps me with my card business. She is just graduated RISD student. She's super awesome, Lynette. And my son will hang out down here while, you know, we're getting orders packed and things like that. So he's already, I'm like, I can't wait until he can start doing this. I can put him to work when he's old enough.
Do you plan to have more children?
No.
I feel like you guys are a mirror of us. So weird. But continue.
Yeah, I think I'm sure, I don't know how you feel, but I think for Eric and I, we were just like, I almost feel like our careers and our creative pursuits are our other babies.
That's a good way to put it.
And, you know, we love our son so much, and we're happy to have him be our focus, and we're pretty happy with that. I don't think that, you know, we both have siblings. And we love our siblings, but yeah, I think Wilder will just have to live with cat siblings.
At the age he is now, what would you say is the most stressful part of the day with him, and what is the best part of the day with him?
I think for a two-year-old, for our two-year-old, the most stressful part of the day is definitely bedtime. It is so, it's gotten a lot better, but it's always been this long process for him. So we have to do like this long wind down and turn the lights down low. It's like a 2-hour thing every night. And I'm always so jealous of the people that are like, oh, they just put their kid in the crib and they fall asleep and then they can go continue on with their night. Like, mm-hmm. he doesn't go to bed until like 10 o'clock a lot of nights. And we're just so exhausted. We just collapse at that point too. So that's probably the worst part of our day. But the best part, I think, is especially now that it's nice out, going anytime we're outside with him. He loves being outside and he is a rock collecting fanatic. Well, scour the ground for rocks and just like hoard as many rocks as he can in his hands. And like when he runs out of space, he'll like find my hand and like give me some rocks. So we have like rocks all over our house. And he's so happy. It's like we have all these toys and like things for him, but for him, it's rocks.
And he doesn't have any desire to eat them.
Oh, yeah, he does. Okay. He does. If he has like ones that are small enough, he'll put them in there, but he's better now about not trying to swallow them. He just, if I put my hand out, he'll just spit them out. He knows. Yeah.
My daughter does that with stickers too. She chews on them, and then as soon as I put my hand out, she spits it into my hand. Thanks.
They know.
Thanks for that. Well, so let's go back to your work a little bit. You've moved into enamel pins now as well, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have any other products that you have your eye on to move into next?
Oh, that's a good, I kind of always have this list of like ongoing ideas. And a lot of right now, recently for me with the stationery stuff, I have these two minds now because I kind of like have my own product business and then I also license with people. So it's always like this, it's like this weird thing now where I'm like, oh, I could do it myself or should I try to pursue this project with a company instead? So it's kind of, I'm always like trapped in that and I have this like list of ideas, like what's feasible that I could do on my own and then have total creative control or like, what should I try to partner with somebody with? And with the pins, I was able to partner with Badge Bomb. And they're an amazing company. Super, super awesome people. Love working with them. And we have a really wonderful back and forth collaborative relationship. So they've been a wonderful partner in that sense. So they allow me to, like, they sell the pins and patches that I create with them on their website and to their wholesalers, but they also allow me to wholesale them as well. So it's kind of the, like, perfect world where we can both, like, share in selling the product and, like, ownership of the product. So that's, like, not really an answer to your question.
No, that's good. Or maybe is there something that you wish that your designs or illustrations would be printed on that it hasn't been printed on yet?
There probably is, and I just like don't even know about it yet. Yeah. Like I feel like I am always like, especially now where, you know, there's just less time to like, you know, daydream and things like that. Mm-hmm. I used to think about that stuff a lot more, and now I'm just a lot more focused in on like the creation of the work and seeing where that leads and like partnerships form from it. And I feel like last year I exhibited at Surtex, which is a trade show for the surface industry. I didn't do the trade show this year because it was just too crazy, too busy. But people come to you and they're like, hey, we're interested. We're a company that licenses artwork for, you know, X, Y, and Z. And you're like, oh my God, I've never even like heard of that or thought of that. So I feel like there's a lot out there and you just never really know until they find you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I always think that's really cool. I guess I always love doing stationery projects. And that's something this year I got to do a really fun sticker book with a company called Rockpoint. And they kind of gave me almost total creative control with it. They came up with the dye lines. It's called Put a Sticker on It.
Is it out now?
Yeah, it's out now. And it came out in March. And that was super fun because they were just like, here's the dye lines for these stickers. There's going to be 500 stickers in this book. Like, go crazy.
Wow.
And it
that's
was
great.
Super fun. And like, that's a project I would have never come up with on my own or thought of, you know, it's just, so I always love stuff like that where it's just like this really fun collaboration.
How do you go about designing for a product that you intend to sell or license? And how is that different from designing for a client who comes to you directly?
With the licensing stuff, it's more, cause you don't know where it's going to end up. Or a lot of times, like if a client does buy it for like fabric, let's say, like they'll have you make modifications to it. So I like to kind of not imagine where it would end up, to like then allow them to say, oh, hey, could you do this? And like, a couple different colorways and take the feather out of this and make it a toss. And we'll use that as the simple, you know, repeat for the fabric collection, like things like that, where it's like, again, it becomes more collaborative, but it's still licensing. I really like that. So I know there's been like a huge, like some licensing artists like to create like Photoshop mockups of like what their surface designs would look like on something. Mm-hmm. But I tend to stay away from that for that reason. Cause I've seen clients be like, not be able to make the leap, I guess, if that makes sense. Like they'll see it and they'll be like, well, but you don't have anything for fabric, you know? And it's like, oh, of course this can be used for fabric. Just look at it in a different way. But sometimes they don't want to make that leap or look at things that way or look that closely at it. So, I try to keep it as like free form, I guess, as possible. And then when it's work with clients, it's much more like the typical process of like sketching. And then, and I really like both. I think there's like such a great, balance in what happens with both. I think my approach is kind of the same, but it's always, I always appreciate the collaboration. I really like getting feedback as I work.
Well, do you have any upcoming workshops or anything or any other book projects that are coming out that you'd like to share?
I have a calendar coming out. I think it's supposed to, it might already be out. It is called, I got to get the name right because we changed it so many times. Or I don't think it went through too many changes, but it sounds like, oh, here it is. The Busy Family Plan. Is it Busy Family Planning Calendar? For a little while, it was called like the Family Planning Calendar, and that was wrong. It's called Busy Family, the 2018 Planning Calendar, and it's got August through December. And it comes with like stickers and all kinds of fun stuff, and it's to help you, it kind of like reminded me when I worked on this project of the whiteboard that we had on our fridge. There's like slots for every family member. So you can write down each family member's name on the side, and then it gives you a different spot for each day of every month. It's like a big fold out month. So you can write down what people are doing and kind of keep track of everyone.
Oh, I might have to look into that. We use a shared Google calendar, but then I never look at it. And I'm still always asking him, what do you have going on today? That would be easier.
Yeah, when I got this project, I was definitely like, I can see my life in this.
So. If people want to know more about you and your work, where should they go?
My website is AllisonColeIllustration.com. And Instagram too. I'm a frequent Instagrammer.
Perfect. Well, thank you again so much for being on the show. I really appreciate you taking the time out.
Thank you so much for having me. I loved talking with you.
Thanks again to Allison Cole for being on the show. It was really great to talk with her, especially given how much we have in common. I've been getting so much great feedback about the show, and I just want to say to everyone who has gotten in touch how much I appreciate it. As I've told some of you, this show is a labor of love, and it means a lot that people are actually getting something out of it. So thank you for listening, and thank you for sharing. And if you have a second to rate and review on iTunes, it would really help me to reach new listeners. Our theme music was created by Thomas James and Jason Ritz, and I want to thank our brand new syndicate, Illustration Age. If you'd like to know more about myself or the show, you can go to michellekondrich.com/creativeplaydate. I'm also on Twitter at Miss Illustrator and Instagram at M. Kondrich. Thanks again for listening. Now go play.